Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August the 28th, 2017, or it is Elul 7, 2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, Bringing in the Sheaves. Sowing in the morning, sowing seeds of kindness, sowing in the noontide and the dewy, waiting for the harvest and the time of reaping, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep. Bringing in the sheep, bringing in the sheep, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep, bringing in the sheep, bringing in the sheep, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep. Sowing in the sunshine, sowing in the shadow, hearing of the clouds, no winter chilling breeze. Lying by the harvest and the labor ended, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves. Bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves. Bringing in the sheep, bringing in the sheep, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep. Going forth with weeping, sowing for the master, though the loss of stand, our spirit often grieves. When our weeping's over, he will bid us welcome, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep. Bringing in the sheep, bringing in the sheep, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep. Bringing in the sheep, bringing in the sheep, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheep. Part 12, Noah, and the days of Noah. Antitype, we're in part 12, once again. We're on page 259, Shepherd Rod, volume 2. And our title for the subject today is the first and second temple type and antitype. For the Apostle Paul, speaking comparatively of Solomon's temple, that the church points to Yahshua as the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together, he says, is for an habitation of Yahweh through the Spirit. Ephesians 2:20-22. For the David looking prophetically forward unto the construction of the first temple by his son, and also of its application unto the congregation of Yahshua, said, for the stone which the builders refused is become the headstone of the corner. This is the Yahweh's doing, for it is marvelous in our eyes. Psalm 118, verse 22-23. Speaking of the ancient temple, the scripture says, and the house, when it was in the building, was built of the stone, made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither hammer nor axe nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in the building. 1 Kings 6:7. A peculiar stone, which was prepared to fit the main corner of the temple, was disallowed. And though the builders refused the headstone of the house, the psalmist says, this is the Yahweh's doing. It is marvelous in our eyes. By the refusal of the stone, the Yahweh typified. Okay, let's do this again. by the refusal of the stone, the Yahshua typified, there it is, in Vitihalos writing, this headstone, the cornerstone, is the Yahshua typified. So now this stone is a symbol of the typification of the Yahshua, the Messiah. That is to come again, and those that build in this temple, again, this headstone then will be, the cornerstone will be the first thing that they will set up. And the building of it in the top, the cornerstone was the last thing that they set up, and they had lost it. They had to go and dig it out of the sand that was buried in the sand in order to complete the building. So when they put that cornerstone in there at the end of the building, that completed the building of the building. So today, when we build that spiritual temple again, Yahweh's purified apostles, there's Zerubbabel's that lays the foundation, and the apostles that are built upon the apostles. Then Yahshua will be that cornerstone. They have to have that cornerstone laid first before they can build upon that foundation. Yahshua, him being the chief cornerstone. And so by that cornerstone being lost and buried in the sand until the building was built back then, typified the Jewish nation not recognizing Yahshua when he was born and came the first time. And he was born unto them, and they didn't recognize him. That typified the Jewish church not recognizing him. Well, again, we have in our day, Rodus W. Johnson, he got the blueprint for the rebuilding of this spiritual temple after the pattern in 1970. I joined him, and he laid the foundation, and he got everything laid in place. The only thing that he overlooked was the cornerstone. And when that cornerstone came to him in 2002 at the Passover and said, "Hey, you need to place me at the corner of this building, because without me, this building is not completed." And Brother Johnson rejected it. I showed that was a sign that the Jewish nation, again, had rejected Yahshua. And that Jewish nation was all encapsulated in the Adventist Church. So, it says, "And thus prophesied the rejection of Yahshua by the Jewish nation." Not only by the physical Jews today, they have rejected him clear on down for the last 2,000 years. And so has the Adventist Church. Because they're the spiritual head of this Jewish nation in these last days. They have been designated to raise up this Jewish nation in the United States of America. That's reason why Yahweh had Spain to send their explorer, Christopher Columbus, in 1492. And that's why by divine providence he was led to these great shores of America. And that's when America was originally founded. That's been over 500 years ago, folks. And so Yahweh was laying the foundation for a new Jerusalem here in the Western Hemisphere. Okay. So now here we see it. It says, see Acts chapter 4, verse 10 and 11. "For the Yahshua said, the stone which the builders rejected, the same has become the headstone of the corner." Matthew 21:42. "Therefore, if it became the head of the corner, then it is evident that the first temple was a representation of a spiritual house and a type of the Vitiala called it Christian church here. And that's where Vitiala hasn't grown enough knowledge-wise with understanding and wisdom of the prophecy and the respect for the sacred names. If Vitiala had made the subject of the sacred names a subject matter as well, he would have known you would never use that word Christ, which is just a word, a title for that took the place of the Messiah. And he would have known that you wouldn't use this Christian. He would have known by studying the sacred names that he would have used the apostolic Sabbatarian Nazarenes that Yeshua, the Savior, has set up at the cross. So, I'll read this again. Therefore, if it has become the head of the corner, then it is evident that the first temple was a representation of a spiritual house and a type of the antitypical spiritual house with the name Apostolic Sabbatarian Nazarene Creed. Yeshua himself being represented by the chief cornerstone that the builders refused has been both the head and the founder of the antitypical apostolic Nazarene congregation creed. At the age of 30, when he started his ministry, the first day on his ministry, first thing he did, he went to the temple and he turned over the tables of the money changers and drove them out with a cat of nine lives whip and said, "Get out of here. You don't make my father's house a house of merchandise. This, my father's house shall be called a house of prayer." Well, that's what we represent today. This house that we're building today is called the house of prayer. You go to Isaiah 56 and read about that. All right, it said, "For the second temple and the erection of the second temple, Haggai and Zechariah prophesied and strengthened the hands of the people by the word of the Yahweh. For the writings of both prophets bear evidence in every line that the perfect fulfillment of their prophecy is to be realized in the last days of this world's history. As they have interwoven these predictions with the construction of the second temple, it is obvious that the literal model of the stately edifice has a spiritual meaning for the temple and the closing work of the Yahshua, Y-A-H-S-P-E-L, meaning the teaching of the everlasting covenant, the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. Zechariah, looking forward unto the time of the spiritual temple, the last section of the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene Creed 2,000 years ago, and this construction says, "Behold, the man whose name is the branch." Now, look at this. The man whose name is the branch. Well, if the antitypical Elijah is this man, Malachi 4:5, then his Hebrew pronouncement of his name would be Eliyahu, two parts of the Father's name, and Yahshua is also the Father's name. And so Yahshua, he also has several names, and one of them is the branch. So now, Yahshua also was and is a man. Now, people have problem with that Yahshua being a man, and trying to make him the very God of the universe to take the Father's place. But it says here in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28 that Lucifer is a man just like us. He was created as a man in heaven, but he's called an angel. But here on earth, in Revelation 1, Yahshua, the man, created in heaven first, reincarnated here on this earth as in man's flesh, sinful flesh, is seen walking amidst the seven candlestick, in the midst of the seven candlesticks, with the seven stars in his hand, which are the seven angels of the seven candlesticks. Now, then, if these are seven angels that come from heaven, because if we believe that no man here on earth can be an angel, identified as an angel, well, then we'd have to believe that those seven angels must have a name. And if you can't find a name for them, then they're just a kind of a fictitious symbol of ministers. Or did I say ministers? That they could actually be an earthly fallen angel? Lucifer and his angel that followed him are called fallen angels. But what about man when they fall into sin? That are called to be spiritual. They're called fallen angels here on earth. So, if man can be called an angel, which Yahshua called seven of them there in Revelation 1, he called seven of them angels, and in Revelation 2, and he's calling angels of Ephesus, angels of Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And we identified that seventh angel of Laodicea with the name Rhodes W. Johnson. So that proves the point I'm trying to make. When it says right here, behold the man whose name is the branch. Well, in other words, it says, observe and open up your eyes and here he is standing before you. And his name is the branch. And he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of Yahweh. All right, now, I'm going to stop right there. I'll let Norma go ahead and finish that paragraph. Even he shall build the temple of the Yahshua. Huh. Well, does that mean that Yahshua is this man? And that he is going to build his own temple? Or is it saying that Yahshua is this man and he's going to build the temple of the Father, Yahweh? And he shall bear the glory and shall sit and rule upon his throne? Okay, this is where the rub comes in. So you go to Luke 1, 31, 32, 33, it says Yahshua is going to be sent back to this earth in the last days, and the Father in heaven is going to give unto Yahshua the throne of his earthly father David. to sit upon and reign until he puts all enemies under his footstool. And then when he gets through doing that, he's going to deliver this kingdom up to the Father in heaven. He's going to deliver it up to him. Meaning the Father is still in heaven and Yahshua is here on earth. Zechariah 6:12-15. Alright now. Let's go to Jeremiah 23:1-5 or 1-7. Woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter sheep of my pasture, saith the Yahshua. Therefore thus saith the Yahweh Elohim of Israel against the pastors that feed my people. You have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doing, saith the Yahweh. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries whither I have driven them, and will bring them again unto their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increased. And I will set up shepherds, more than one, over them, which shall feed them. Now he's talking about, I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries. He's talking about the Gentile nations. And they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed, neither shall they be lacking, saith the Yahweh. Behold, the days come, saith the Yahweh, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch. Means a righteous congregation with the name of the branch. And a king shall reign and prosper. And a king, didn't say the king of antitypical David, didn't say that, just said a king shall reign and prosper and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. This is where we're at, folks. This a king is this man that builds the temple, whose name is the branch. Okay, now what happens when the Yahweh sends his son as the bridegroom, and he invites the 10 virgins to come to the banquet, to the marriage feast. He said, we're having a marriage. So he's inviting all 10 of those virgins to be his bride. But he says 5 were foolish. The 5 wise ones accepted the invitation, and they put on their bridal attire. They put on their wedding garment, and these 5 wise virgins had on a bridal gown. Because they're the wife. Right? So he's going to raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. So this righteous branch has the name of Yahshua the Son. And it says verse 6 of Jeremiah 23, in his days, this is in Yahshua's days here, before he is married to the church, he has his days alone, doing this work by himself to bring forth his bride. This is the work for his bride. In his days, Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this is his name whereby he shall be called the Yahshua, our righteousness. So he's going to be called the Yahshua. He's going to call him by his name, which is the first part of his name is the Father's name. The Son's first part of his name is the Father's name, Yahuwah. And he's going to be called the Yahshua, our righteousness. He's our righteousness now. Therefore, behold, the day is come, saith Yahweh, that they shall no more say, the Yahshua liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. that the Yahshua liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country and from all countries where thou had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. Now let's go to Jeremiah 33 and let's read about this wedding feast that takes place after he marries his bride. Then he gives her his name. All right. It says, and it's Jeremiah 33, start with 14. Behold, the days come, saith the Yahweh, that I will perform that good thing which I have promised unto the house of Israel and unto the house of Judah. In those days and at that time will I cause the branch of righteousness to grow up unto David. So there's a branch of righteousness today, an atypical branch that was planted in 1970 at Kermit, Texas, at Florida Study Johnson, as the man announcing the birth and the sprouting of that branch in 1970. It coincided with the sprouting of that same branch that had a band around it there in Jerusalem in 1970, that sprouted in 1970. And those learned rabbis in Jerusalem at that time in 1970 recognized that particular stump that had a brass band put around it 2,000 years ago that was cut down. They put a brass band around it. They said, the year that this here stump sprouts is the year that the antitypical Messiah is to grow up unto and build this spiritual house of Israel. It sprouted in 1970. And Gilead Center sprouted in 1970 with that doctrine, with that truth. Running parallel with that symbol that sprouted in Jerusalem in 1970. Literally happened. In those days and at that time when I caused a branch of the righteousness to grow up under David, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. This is in the land of Israel. Now you notice here in Jeremiah 23, it says that he was going to execute judgment and righteousness in the earth, and Yahshua is going to do this by himself. He marries his bride when he takes her to the land. And it's called in the land. So when you read the word land, it's talking about the land of Israel, most usually proper. But when it says earth, it's talking about the United States. Okay, so it says that in his days, Jeremiah 23 says, Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. And this his name shall be called Yeshua righteousness. And it says in verse 5, behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that will raise unto David a righteous branch. And the king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. So, judgment and justice starts here in the United States first. Starts at the house of Yahweh, started at Gilead Center 2002. And then it says, in his days, in Yahshua's days, Judah shall be saved. Okay. So, Yahshua's days started then at the Passover 2002. His days is in the 12th parabolic hour. Yahshua's growing up under David was in the 11th parabolic hour from 1970 to 2003. And after he grew up under David, then his days began when he started his ministry in the Antitype, like he did in the top. At the age of 30 in 27 AD, Yahshua started his ministry. Then that became his days. His days. And what did Yahshua do for the next 3.5 years? He executed judgment and justice in the land of Israel. Today in his last days, he starts his judgment and justice again in the Antitype here in the earth. And then he finishes up in the land. Jeremiah 23 and Jeremiah 33 has both of those stories. Let's continue. Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 260. We're on the the first paragraph, we had zero paragraph, now we got number one paragraph. He shall bear the glory. Unto Yahshua belongs the glory of the redemption for the fallen race. Unto him that loved us and washed us from our sins in his own blood, to him be the glory and dominion forever and ever. Revelation 1, 5 and 6. He shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne. Zechariah 6:13. For Yahshua, who is the faithful witness and the first begotten of the dead and the prince of the kings of the earth, Revelation 1:5, he shall be a priest upon his throne. It is obvious that the time predicted is sometime after the crucifixion and before the probation has closed. For he is a priest. Yahshua, the branch, shall grow up out of his place. That is, he was to spring up from the Jewish nation, and that's what he did in 1970. It shows right there whenever that little tender sprout sprouted in 1970 from that tree stump that they had put a band around it 2,000 years ago. When it sprouted, and he shall build the temple of the Yahweh. Therefore, the temple that he shall build could not have been the literal temple in the ancient Jerusalem. For it was the temple that he is to build after his birth. And they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Yahshua. So we got the Gentiles now. They're congregating this year from all over the world. They're congregating, called a Living Church of God. They're evangelical Christians, Sunday keepers, but they are also, they're feast keepers now. They keep all the holy days according to Leviticus 23 and the laws of Moses. They observe the Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles. They observe Sukkot, which is a dwelling in booths for 7 days. They go to hotels, but nevertheless they recognize that as the thing to do. And so the evangelicals are coming to the light of his rising. Okay, and that day, that is, in the time of the loud cry, a great multitude shall be converted unto the congregation. Chapter 13:8. It is stated that 1/3 of the inhabitants will come, and they are the ones who shall build in the temple of Yahweh, of which the literal one was a type. Okay, let's read that again. In that day, that is, in the time of the loud cry in the 12th parabolic hour, a great multitude shall be converted unto the apostolic, the typical apostolic congregation with the name of Yahshua or righteousness, or the righteous branch. In chapter 13:8 of Zechariah, it is stated that 1/3 of the inhabitants will come, and they are the ones who shall build in the temple of the Yahshua, of which the literal one was a type. So this is 1/3 of the Gentiles, folks. And no doubt they are the lineal descendants of Jacob, with Jewish blood in their veins. Zechariah then saw the powers that had scattered Judah, Israel, and Jerusalem. The type also, the antitype, symbolized by the four horns. Immediately afterwards he saw the same horns as four carpenters, read Zechariah 1:18-21, representing the agencies used by the Yeshua and the restoring of his people, and the house of his worship, both in the type and antitype. That is, the Gentiles who scattered the congregation shall also come and build the same. The literal and spiritual distinction between the two temples. The religious services in both temples were executed in the same manner. But in the structural magnificence, both internal and external, Solomon's temple, comparatively speaking, was by far the greatest. But the Yeshua, by the mouth of Haggai the prophet, asked those who were then engaged in the construction of the house of Yahweh, "Who is left among you that saw this house, Solomon's temple, in her first glory? And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? For the glory of this latter house shall be greater than of the former, saith Yahshua of hosts, and in this place will I give peace, saith Yahshua of hosts," Haggai 2:3-9. Well, this is, we can vouch for the fact that in our place we have peace here. We have peace and tranquility. We have the assurances that the Holy Spirit is with us and have brought us to this place. This is the choice of the Holy Spirit. They went before us. The all-seeing eye went before us, prepared the hearts of the owners of this property to receive us when we arrived. The little grandeur of the second temple and the comparison with the first was as nothing. But the word said, "The glory of this latter house shall be greater than the former." Literally, this was untrue. Therefore, the glory of these two temples and the comparison with each other is not in their literal visible form, but rather in their typical spiritual standing. Consequently, both temples cannot typify the same period of the apostolic era for one distinctly different from the other. Since this is true, then the type shows that the apostolic congregation of the Nazarene in this instance is divided into two sections. So then, in type, the second temple, he notes that the latter section of the church is to be by far the greater, which in the comparison, the former stands as nothing. These two sections of the church history were also pointed out in the vision in Patmos. Under John was shown the true spiritual congregation of Yahweh in all ages, and a symbol of a woman. Under her were given two wings of a great eagle, that she should fly into the wilderness for 1260 days, years. For the wilderness represents the dark ages, in which time she was out of the civilization, from 538 A.D. to 1798 A.D. Therefore, this prophetic period of the 1260 years split the true church into two sections, namely from the crucifixion to 538 A.D. and from 1798 A.D. to the end of the 12th parabolic hour, which marks the end of the probation for the church and the world. Thus, the first section, or as it is called, the apostolic congregation, was typified by the first temple, and the last section by the second temple. This is not saying that Elohim had no true people between the years of 538 A.D. and 1798 A.D., for the word says she is nursed for a time and times and a half a time, Revelation 12:14. The lesson taught here is that the first section of the apostolic congregation in the first few centuries was endowed with the true Sabbath, daily, and the sanctuary truth. Rachel Hadith had it right here. They were endowed with the true Sabbath. He should have put an S on that Sabbath. He should have put endowed with the true Sabbath, hyphen Sabbath, hyphen the daily, the 9 and 3, and hyphen all the sanctuary truth, embodied in Leviticus 23. But prior unto 538 A.D., the truth was trodden under the foot, Daniel 8:12-13. The second section after fulfillment of Daniel, of the 1260-year period, denotes that she was again to be endowed with the truth that was cast onto the ground. And the Reformation between these two sessions from 538 AD to 1798 AD of the congregation, our woman was to prepare the way for her return, for the restoration of the truth for both temples, by which these two sections were typified, representing a worship with the Sabbath and the sanctuary truth. But it should read like this: typified represents a worship, an ordained system of the true worship, with all of the Sabbaths that is embodied in the sanctuary truths and the law of Moses, starting with Leviticus 23. First temple, literally greater, but the second, spiritually. That's our next topic. Okay, let's go. First temple, literally greater, but the second, spiritually. Shepherd Rod, Volume 2, page 262. Says, there was something glorious with both temples, and the greatness of the one was as nothing in comparison with the other. The first visibly exceeded the second, and the second spiritually exceeded the first. But the glorious gift unto both was unsurpassable, as the one represents the early apostolic congregation, and the other the last section of the same congregation. It is evident that both sections were endowed with the great glories, but the glory of the early church was literal, and of the latter spiritual, according unto the types. For the early apostolic congregation was literally greater, because Yahshua, as the head of the corner, appeared at that time in his visible human form. Thus the literal magnificence of the Solomon's temple was a perfect symbol. Really, the type reveals that the glory of the early congregation was as nothing in the comparison with the latter section of the same congregation. Therefore, the visible presence of Yahshua in his human form in the early congregation was as nothing in comparison with his invisible presence in the closing work of the gospel church. For we think of the wonderful miracles, the casting out of the devils, the healing of the sick, and the raising of the dead. We marvel as we think of his resurrection, ascension, and of the glorious demonstration on the day of the Pentecost. But all these wonders will be as nothing in the comparison with the divine manifestation of the greater splendor in the harvest time. Let us not suppose that when the Yahshua appears in the clouds, that the infirmities of the saints are to be removed. For this work must be done previous to that time, after which immortality shall be granted. He that believeth in me, the works that I do, said the Yahshua, shall he do also, and greater works than these shall he do, John 14:12. For the perfect fulfillment of these words are yet future, and must be fulfilled before his second advent. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. 1 Corinthians 15:53-54. Therefore, in the time of the loud cry, miracles are wrought. The sick will be healed. The eyes of the blind shall be opened. The deaf shall hear. The tongue of the dumb loosed. And the lame shall leap for the joy. What a glorious sight. Those who have never seen light to behold the glory of the Yeshua. They who have never heard his sound, now listening unto the glorious melodies of the angels' harps and the singing of the saints, what a thrill, what bliss. And the Yahweh shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. Revelation 21:4. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. Then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. 1 Corinthians 15:51-54. As the living saints witness the dead of all ages rising from their dusty beds, it will bring joy indescribable. Then to behold friends and loved ones as they meet each other clothed in the glorious incorruptible bodies, marching through space via the sinless planets and to the heaven of heaven. What a glorious train of the immortal beings, saints and angels, and the King of Kings, the Yeshua, our Savior, as the Prince of Peace in the midst of them, swiftly flying from the sin-cursed earth unto the center of the sinners in about 7 days, while it would take light millions of years to make a trip of such incomprehensible distance. Can you perceive of an object moving with such tremendous velocity? But Yahweh forbid that we should rob ourselves of the glory like this. In ours time lived in heaven without sin, pain or tears, fear or death, is worth more than 1,000 years in the tents of wickedness. My brethren, to obey the word of Yahweh and be true to principle for your own good is not asking too much of you. Will you let sin and self and sin rob you of a crown of life? Your human wisdom and worldly knowledge will prove to be as black as darkness itself if you should allow the wily foe to rob you of the celestial bliss that should be yours throughout the ceaseless ages of eternity. Though the early apostolic congregation suffered terrible persecution, she prospered wonderfully, for the 3,000 converted on the day of the Pentecost, as such as should be saved, was marvelous to behold. Okay, it says, but the speedy growth of the first section of the church in the comparison with the second and last is to be as nothing according unto the type. Therefore, the same is proven by the prophetic word of Yahweh through the prophet Zechariah. And as the prediction was interwoven with the construction of the second temple, or with the type of the second section of the church of which we speak at this particular time, the application of the following scriptures must be correct. Sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Yeshua. And many nations shall be joined unto the Yeshua in that day, and shall be my people, and I will dwell in the midst of thee. Zechariah 2:10-11. Yea, many people and strong nations shall come to seek the Yahshua, the host in Jerusalem, the congregation without reference to location, and to pray before the Yahshua. Chapter 8:22. Therefore, thy gates, that must be Zechariah chapter 8:22. Therefore, thy gates shall be open continually. They shall not be shut day or night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. Isaiah 60, verse 11. And it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Yahshua, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Yahshua is my Elohim. Zechariah 13:8-9. This is talking about the Gentiles, the third of the Gentiles. Also is going to be brought to the fire. With the 3,000 converts in one day in comparison unto one third of the people saved of this present generation. And I'm talking about of this here Gentiles. Gathered in during the last hours of the probationary time. Truly then it can be said, for the glory of the first temple, or first section of the apostolic congregation, was as nothing in the comparison with the second. For the last section of the apostolic congregation at the time of the loud cry is indeed the harvest time and the end of the world. For the early apostolic congregation was a converted, righteous congregation. Nevertheless, the tares and the wheat were to grow together until the harvest, Matthew 13:30. For these words, until the harvest, cannot be mistaken. Therefore, at the commencement of the harvest, the separation takes place. Thus, the congregation in the time of the loud cry is to be a pure and holy congregation, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, a church without guile. If the foregoing statement is correct, then this same must be found in the prophetic word of Yahweh. Now, brethren, I beg of you to hear the word of the good shepherd. Awake, awake. Put on thy strength, O Zion. Put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For henceforth, from now on, there shall no more come unto thee the uncircumcised and the unclean. Shake thyself from the dust. Arise and sit on thy throne, O Jerusalem. Loose thyself from the bands of thy neck, O captive daughter of Zion. Isaiah 52:1-2. As these words are so plain, how can we doubt or misconstrue their meaning? For it must be that the congregation of Yahweh is asleep in the dust. Thy Elohim is calling thee, O Zion, of the congregation, the only object on earth upon which he bestows his supreme regard, is in the captivity. She is found by her neck. She is bound by her neck unto men of the good words and fair speeches. Hear the words of thy Elohim, O Zion. Arise and sit on thy throne, for thou shalt judge nations. Why make flesh thy arm? Is not thy Elohim able to save thee? Is not the word of thy Yahweh quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even unto the dividing asunder of the soul and spirit, and a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart? For Zion's sake will I not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest, until the righteousness thereof go forth as a brightness, and the salvation thereof as a lamp that burneth. My brethren, go through the gates, prepare the way of Yahshua, cast up the highway, gather out the stones, lift up the standard for the people, Isaiah 62:1-10. For the remnant of Israel, 144,000 shall not do iniquity, nor speak lies. Neither shall a deceitful tongue be found in their mouth, for they shall feed and lie down, and none shall make them afraid. Zephaniah 3:13. And that day shall there be upon the bells of the horses those that carry the gospel, holiness unto the Asir, and the pots in whose possession is the truth, and the Asir's house shall be like the bowls before the altar, pure and undefiled. Yes, every pot in Jerusalem, in the church, and in Judah, the leading part of the church, the lawgiver part, the house of David, that's the leading part of the Adventist church, shall be holiness unto the Yahshua the host. And all they that sacrifice our offering shall come and take of them and see therein, they who administer in the sacred things. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite, the unconverted, in the house of the Yahshua the host. Zechariah 14:20-21. This is the Yahshua church that is represented in the Revelation 12:17, which keep the commandments of Yahweh and have the testimony of Yahshua Messiah. For the woman represents the church as a body, the remnant of her seed of the 144,000 against whom the dragon makes war. The war is waged against them because they are the earthly leaders and founders of the movement. Of her seed signifies that they are part of the woman, or in other words, 144,000. And the great multitude is but one movement, one family. Unto the saints of this holy congregation, the benediction is pronounced. Blessed are they that do his commandments, that they may have a right to the tree of life and may enter into the gates into the city. Revelation 22:14. Okay, for the Jacob, the father, and the type of the Israel, the true dreamed on the way unto Padan-Aram, and behold, a ladder stood up on the earth, and the top of it reached unto heaven, and behold, the angel of the Elohim ascending and descending on it. And he was afraid, and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of Yahweh, and this is the gate of heaven. Genesis 28:12-17, and this is what we say right here about Liberty Hill, Texas. This is the gateway to heaven. Jacob's dream is prophetic of a time when there will be a complete connection and constant communication with heaven and earth, the loud cry of the third angel's message, the harvest time, to that glorious church that these words apply. This is the house of Yahweh and the gate of heaven, only by the gospel's proclamation. Through that spiritual house can Yahweh save his people. There is to be one fold, one shepherd, one Yahshua, one truth to embrace, one salvation to accept, one road to travel, one gate to pass through, one train to take, and one time to depart, one heaven to enter, one people and only, and one holy family. There can be no other way. It is impossible to give any idea of the experience of the people of the Elohim who shall be alive upon the earth when the celestial glory and a repetition of the persecution of the past are blended. They will walk in the light proceeding from the throne of the Yahweh by the means, or the throne of Yahshua, by the means of the angels. There will be constant communication between heaven and earth. Testimony for the Church, Volume 9, page 16, by the Ellen G. White. This brings in verse 10, this hour, contact us at the 11th hour call, that's number 11, click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song.